Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Friday, August 5th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, the new state health officer lays out his priorities and addresses the latest public health emergency. Then, leaders of the oldest organization of Black churches in Mississippi issue resolutions on gun violence and misused welfare money. Plus, we talk to a Mississippi-born director about his new film. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Mississippi has a new state health officer. Dr. Thomas Dobbs announced his resignation from the post in March. His last day on the job was July 31st. On Monday, Dr. Dan Edney took over the role. Edney, a physician from Vicksburg, has previously served as deputy health officer. He shared his thoughts on taking on the job during a press conference yesterday.
This is a unique challenge, and I felt the calling to do it. And, you know, now that as I leave private practice, I'm very excited to engage in my new public practice and to look after the healthcare issues and certainly the public health issues of now 2.9 million Mississippi patients of the population of our state. I take that responsibility quite seriously. And why in the world would I do this? And it very simply, I have felt the need to be a catalyst for change.
For Edney, that change starts with changing where Mississippi ranks in many healthcare indicators. He says for far too long, the state has been at the top of every list of health disparities.
We're still struggling mightily in the obesity battle. We're struggling mightily with the impact of diabetes and hypertension, stroke and heart disease throughout our population. We are seeing an escalation in deaths related to opioid overdoses. And for me, the most egregious part is that, you know, we still lead the nation in maternal infant mortality. Well, so these are issues that are of great importance and that, you know, we need to continue to attack. You know, I just refuse to accept the premise. I've said this before, I will continue to say it, that I just refuse to accept the premise that we have to be last in every healthcare indicator and have such struggles with health disparities. I just refuse to accept the fact that it's our fate to be the unhealthiest population in the nation. You know, I refuse to believe that our teenagers and college-age students must continue to die at an escalating rate of opioid overdoses. It's getting worse, not better. And the most egregious of all of it is I refuse to believe that our mothers and babies are just fated to continue to die at the highest rate in the nation. And this, you know, we're talking about white mothers and Black mothers. We're talking about white babies and Black babies. All of us are dying at higher rates than the rest of the nation. But what's absolutely egregious is the fact that our Black mothers are dying at three times the rate of the rest of the nation.
Edney recognizes that these issues are challenging, but says they are solvable. In addition, he takes over the position during a period when COVID-19 cases are at their highest levels in 6 months. And on top of that, he has a new health challenge to manage. Yesterday, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services declared a public health emergency to bolster the federal response to monkeypox, which has infected more than 6,600 Americans. The announcement frees up federal money and resources to fight the virus, and Edney says the state has a plan to contain the disease.
Right now, our focus is on our high risk population, where we're vaccinating those who are close contacts to individuals who have documented monkeypox, or those who are at higher risk. And that's in our gay men population, bisexual, transgender, HIV positive are at risk. And we're really deploying our vaccine in that area. So in terms of the school, we're working hard for it not to spill over. And so I really think our kids are not at risk. They're certainly at no risk right now. And anyone who's in a monogamous sexual relationship, who's not having intimate contact with others, is at, very, very low risk. So, right now, Dr. Paul Byers and our epidemiology team has a great strategy to protect those at higher risk. And we are watching this very closely. We're now up to 6 cases in the state, but it's not exploding. And I think, we have a good plan to try to contain it as much as we can.
Dr. Dan Edney is the new State Health Officer of Mississippi. Coming up, leaders of the oldest organization of Black churches in the state issue resolutions on gun violence and misused welfare funds. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Southern Remedies, Relatively Speaking, is a show that explores issues that relate to you and your family. To find out what we're all about, subscribe to the podcast by using any podcast app or by downloading our MPB Public Media app.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. The oldest organization of Black churches in the state is calling for action on matters it calls spiritual and doctrinal in nature. The General Missionary Baptist State Convention met last month and passed resolutions on gun violence and the alleged misuse of welfare funds by state officials. Dr. C.J. Rhodes is a pastor at Mount Helm Baptist Church in Jackson and serves as vice president of the convention. He explains their meaning and purpose with MPB's Rhonda Dunaway.
Though we are not anti-gun, we're not anti-Second Amendment folks, we do recognize that the unintended or maybe intended consequences of open carry have had a major, major impact negatively on our communities. And we want for the state of Mississippi to revisit that in order to help not only our churches, but also law enforcement and others to handle the spike in violent crime.
And the Missionary Baptist, is there a particular policy that you want to see implemented, or you're saying that you are open to, like you said, revisiting the current policy? What will that look like?
Well, we do support, as the resolution states, that we support the repeal of open carry. What is in its place? We're up for discussion about that. What is the best and most sensible approach to gun safety? Of course, we are a state that believes in hunting and protecting our homes and our property and our own lives. So we definitely stand in solidarity with those who believe in and prize gun ownership. What we're really looking for is a better legislation that kind of, if you will, seals that loophole. Where right now in the streets of Jackson or Hazelhurst, Mississippi, where I'm from, someone could walk around with long guns and you really can't do anything about it because of the present law. And many of our neighborhoods and communities are being terrorized, not just by white nationalists around the country, but even, youth, black youth in our communities that are lawless with regard to gun violence. And so we want to sit down with anyone, Republican, Democrat, Independent, who thinks of a better way to approach this dilemma and are willing to hear what the better solution, the better legislation would be, and would look to support something that is a better replacement of the open carry gun laws.
So that kind of leads me to the next thing I want to ask you about, talk to you about, is it's the last resolution, be it finally resolved, that we will hold ourselves accountable for gun violence. So are there some community outreach programs that you are aware of within the Missionary Baptist State Convention or in your own church or maybe in a community that you know of?
Well, certainly. I mean, I think, again, going back to what I noted in terms of local churches, at any interval, you know, local churches are engaging in a variety of levels in interventions. That's everything from prayer walks to various kinds of ministry and outreach opportunities for youth and young adults, helping persons with mental health and emotional health issues. I mean, you can just go down the list of all the various kinds of charitable and social service opportunities that local churches provide. And so demonstrating the love of Jesus Christ beyond, you know, Sunday morning, beyond preaching, but being the hands and feet of Jesus is a big part of what we do. And for so many of our folks in our communities, the sense of hopelessness, of purposelessness, that often are the prerequisites for homicidal or even suicidal behaviors are definitely things that we respond to in the immediate, but also, again, work with law enforcement, the judiciary, and others to find more systemic resolutions to these beyond the interpersonal and communal work that we tend to do.
The second of the two resolutions demands accountability and public disclosure of those responsible in the TANF welfare fraud scandal. Rhodes says if the allegations are true, it would be another example of bad faith politics.
Speaking about amorality, you know, one of the, you know, where I talked earlier about amorality, I think this particular resolution speaks to immorality, where you've got, again, the resolution says reportedly, because all this has been reported, and of course it has to cycle through our court systems. But based on the allegations, there allegedly were immoral actors who most of them would hold to some Christian values or broader ethical values that were not lived up to in this. In a state that often demonizes the poor for being poor, you have an agency that for any numbers of reasons stole, if you will, from poor people who needed those resources. And so first, we want to just demonstrate that we have a prophetic voice on this matter. We want our constituents and Mississippians in general to know that the General Missionary Baptist State Convention is taking notice of this, sees it as an immoral act, and therefore want all persons who were actually involved in this theft to be held to account at both the state and federal levels, and that all Mississippians who were stolen from are fully recompensed, fully restored, so that whatever their particular needs were that were to be met by these funds will hopefully be met even though belatedly.
What do you think this case, this possible, you know, theft from, you know, from poor people, if all allegations are true, what do you see that saying as the about the structural racism in our state?
Well, I think if all the allegations are true, or many of them are true, I think the bigger thing it speaks to, and I'm going to get to your piece about structural racism, but I think it speaks to kind of the dead religion of too many of us in this most religious state. Mississippi is one of the most churched states in the union, and yet we know the stats that we are pretty much at the top of every bad list and at the bottom of every good list. good religion is not just what gets us to heaven, but helps us have a little bit of heaven on earth while we're still around. And so I think the hypocrisy, the immorality, the injustice of this speaks to the way then in which how religion in this state is often used to shroud systemic racism and classism so that the haves can continue to have and that the have-nots continue to be left behind. And prayerfully, this scandal and our resolution speaking to it will encourage a moral revival in Mississippi where people who are, people who follow Jesus Christ, but also those of goodwill, stand up and call out any kind of deception, duplicity, as relates to our most vulnerable. We often remember the stereotype of the welfare queen, all this stuff. Here's an opportunity for us to make right do what's right by our most vulnerable. That the government is in the place to ensure the welfare, particularly of those persons. And lastly, hopefully this will help us understand and appreciate how can we make sure fewer people are in poverty in Mississippi, not just through TANF or other kinds of funding, but make sure that we have comprehensive economic development, educational opportunities for all persons, especially Black people and people of color who have historically been maltreated and marginalized in the state.
Dr. C.J. Rhodes is a pastor at Mount Helm Baptist Church in Jackson. Coming up, we talk to a Mississippi-born director about his new film. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
What can you do with the MPB Radio app? Listen live, hear local news, view the schedule, make a contribution, listen to shows on demand, and interact with social media. Get the app for your smartphone now.
When you look at your vehicle, think of MPB. Need to get rid of your ride? Donate it by calling 877-MPB, the number 4, CAR. Need to have some work done on your truck? Listen to AutoCorrect Thursdays at 10, Saturdays at 11. An MPB license plate reminds you that MPB is with you wherever you go. Go to your county office and ask for an MPB car tag. MPB and CARS, better together.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. The Lady Makers is a new film available on Amazon's streaming service, and it's playing at select theaters. It's the product of a filmmaker, Tony Tite, a graduate of Gentry High School in Indianola. Tite, who wrote and directed the feature, did the principal filming in his hometown. He shares more about the film and what it means to be a storyteller.
It's about three young troubled young girls who are from Atlanta, and they are being sentenced to prison. And then the judge decides that he wants to give them an opportunity if they will go through this diversionary program conducted by 10 Jewish women that are in Mississippi. And so these girls, at this time that of their sentences, there are only three Jewish women left. Seven have passed away while doing the particular program. And so anyway, Jasmine Guy plays the housekeeper and for these ladies, and E. Warren Davis, he plays the yard man. And so, but these three young girls come to Mississippi, and then their culture differences, because two of the girls are African-American and one is Latino. And so they're mixed in the house with the Jewish custom. And so all of these customs are mixed or melted together in this melting pot. And that's what creates all the drama. And that's just the story. And so what the ladies are trying to do is turn these girls into ladies. And that's why it's called The Lady Makers.
Jasmine Guy was in A Different World, correct? That's what she's known for.
Yes.
How did you get her to take on that role?
I was actually shooting a commercial with Lynn Whitfield for the United Negro College Fund. And while I was shooting a commercial, she and Jasmine has the same publicist. And I was telling him about this concept that I wanted to do. And so in one of his talents to audition for the role. And so he suggested that, you know, I send the script to Jasmine because he thought she would fit it. So she read the script and then she contacted me and she said she thought it was one of the best scripts that she's ever written in her ever read in her 35-year history. And so she said she loved it and would love to play the part. And so I heard her read and, you know, we chose her for the part.
So that was quite a compliment. This movie, did you come up with the concept or is it from a book?
No, this is an original concept. You know, I just kind of sat down and what happened was that my mother was a housekeeper for 42 years in New York. She's from Indianola, Mississippi. And then she moved up to New York and started working for this Jewish family. And she was a housekeeper there for 42 years and managed to get five of us through college. It was eight. I have eight, you know, brothers and sisters. And she was able to do it, you know, just for sheer gut, you know, and things of that nature. And so I wanted to do something, write something that would be like a tribute to her. And, you know, so I did this. I wrote this movie in that vein, and that's where the story came from. And I just kind of created all the scenarios in the story, but that's where it originated from.
I see. What was the most surprising thing about making this film that you may have learned or maybe knew but didn't realize it was as significant based upon your prior experience being involved in films, but maybe not your own?
The most surprising thing I would say would be the principles of the story. When we were shooting, you know, it's one thing when you write something. It's another thing when an actor embodies what you've written and bring it to life, and then to see the effect that it had on the crew. You know, so whenever you have to stop, you know, shooting because the crew is laughing too much or the crew is, you know, in tears and when you start doing those type of things and it's affecting the crew, that's when you realize if something else is happening. You're not just shooting a movie. An event is happening. Something is happening about. And that was the surprising thing, you know. It's actually a good question that you've asked because no one has ever asked me that question. But that was the surprising thing that I saw in doing this movie.
You know, you hear about these phenomenal amounts of money that it costs to make some of these films that come to theaters. And The Ladymakers, it's at select theaters and it's streaming on Amazon Prime right now. What does it take to raise the money to be able to do films?
You know, it's really about stories. You know, really what it takes, you know, I want to word this the right way because I want, you know, people to, you know, have a good understanding of it. But, you know, if any film or any project starts with a story. Any movie starts with the story. And so if you're going to start raising money, you know, it's not just, you can't just have an idea or a concept. Everybody has, there are millions of ideas and concepts, but it's the actual script. And once you get the story, then you can start approaching those people that are interested in investing in film and willing to take that risk because it is a great risk because it's art and anything creative and artistic has a greater risk than, say, real estate. Or, you know, something like that. But and once you do that, however, it's the greatest payoff exceeding anything you can think of. You know, to get people to invest, it's really all about the story. And God has blessed us to where, you know, he has given me some good stories.
All righty. Well, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. It's William Anthony Hollins. You go by Tony Hollins. In the film world, in your business, you're Tony Tight.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, and all the best with this project and your future endeavors.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.